Do not forget to read the gospel. So today we start, we move from the gospel of Mark to the gospel of John for 5 weeks on this theme of I'm the bread of life. And so this is John's version of the feeding of the 5,000. Now John is, he sounds different than Mark. He's different than Mark. Theologians, we would call John has a high Christology, which means that he emphasizes the divinity of Jesus more than the other gospel writers. And you can see that here, the sixth verse. Jesus said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. See, that's kind of a John thing. Mark wouldn't put that in. And the other thing I want you to make note, that it was Passover time. In John's gospel, he mentions Passover 3 times, and that's important. The people listening to this would catch it right away. The first one is the temple scene early, and then it's this one, and of course, Passover at the end, just before Good Friday. And John wants to make this connection with the Passover. The Passover, when the Jewish people celebrate their deliverance from Egypt, and they wandered in the wilderness, and they were fed with manna, right, from God. Well, they just hear this word, and that's going to connect in their minds. Please stand for the reading from John 6. Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. That's another John thing, signs. There are 7 signs. We usually call them miracles. John calls them signs. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for all these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. And Philip answered, 6 months' wages wouldn't be enough bread for each of them to get even a little. And then one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people?" And Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place. So this was spring, Passover, Easter time, right? If it was this time of year, there would be no grass in Israel, right? So they all sat down, about 5,000 in all. And then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. And when the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who has come into the world." But when Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. The gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
God's beloved people, I really like bread. You've probably noticed. Every time I look in the mirror, I think to myself, who is that fat old man? And in these rather warm summer months, I can't even hide it with the white robe. Not that it helped all that much. Last time I wore it, a few weeks ago, I looked in the mirror that Beth has in her study, mostly to check my stole was somewhat centered. And who was staring back at me but an old Friar Tuck bread? On the other hand, it's probably a week and a half, a couple weeks ago, that I wrote my latest self-improvement list, which I haven't done for a while now. Probably not as often as those nearest and dearest to me think I ought to do them. And guess what was number one on the list? Yep, carbs, as in no more. This week, our gospel reading centers around the feeding of the 5,000 loaves and fishes, 12 baskets of leftovers, and a young boy who shared his lunch. This is the only Jesus story that occurs in the four Gospels six times. Mark and Matthew tell it twice. It's a little different, but it's got to be the same event. Clearly, this event meant a lot to the early church. But what can it mean to us here, now, in our time? In the original setting, we can easily imagine how Jesus would have resonated with the crowds who flocked among him. I mean, they were a colony of Rome. They were peasants. They were overworked and underpaid, and they were malnourished. They knew the pain of an empty table, the hurt of watching their children whimper for bread. Me? Not so much. I've never been hungry like that. The closest thing that I can come up with, I've been trying to think, was a canoe trip when I was 16, five of us in the Boundary Waters canoe area of northern Minnesota. Our first canoe trip. It was a big one, 200 miles, 2 weeks, didn't see anyone for days. And about the 10th or 11th day out, we ran out of food and caught no fish. The meal, I remember, was a mid-afternoon on a small rock of an island in a large lake on a hot day like today. And our meal was a half cup of Lipton chicken noodle soup, you know, from that envelope, you know, the term. Fortunately, the next day, one canoe took a side trip to restock and returned by dinner time. But other than that, I've never had to wait more than a few hours for a meal. I don't think so. So where is the challenge, huh? The power of this wonder, this sign, miracle for me. Now, when I was growing up, I often spent days and weeks of our summers at the lake, the cabin, as Minnesotans call them. Everyone in Minnesota has a cabin. That's not quite true. We didn't. But aunts and uncles did. And most every summer, we would spend a week or so at my mom's sister's place. And it was about this time of year, you know, we would go out into the woods behind the place and pick wild strawberries. They're not like ours here. We got to remember, we live in strawberry heaven here. Those strawberries were small. I mean, really small. This is northern Minnesota, remember. But when my mom and aunt made them into strawberry jam, fresh baked bread, still warm, a little too much butter in that strawberry jam. Maybe my all-time favorite food. And when we weren't at that aunt and uncle's cabin, often we'd be at another aunt and uncle's place. Theirs was much closer to town, so that we'd still go to church on Sunday morning. And my uncles would invite anyone, I mean whoever it seemed to me, out for a late lunch. I'll put a few chickens on the grill, he would say, just come, bring whatever. Yeah, you don't have to, just come. And the crowds, you know, and the table reminds me of today's gospel story. I could go on and on like this, of course, and I hope you could too with those same kind of stories. Because it seems to me that in that world, food was a gift. To prepare it with care was an act of love. To receive it with gratitude was a matter of honor. Now, Mary and I do a fair amount of entertaining and meals. And we are these in this group, just had our dinner group, you know, last Friday night, another great meal. In a week, I expect Erla will ask, are you going to Terry's thing? You know, why don't you come on about 5? Kind of like my uncle, you know. Actually, that's not going to happen. She's in the chorus. Where is she? Were you thinking of that when you said yes? What are we going to do? All that stuff is really important. It's significant. Why is that so important, I've been thinking, besides the people in the friendship thing? I think it is because I want to remember and I want to retain some of that world where food was a gift. In our contemporary culture, it's much harder to honor food as a gift. We tend to treat it like, I don't know, a question, a problem maybe, a concern, certainly an issue. Jesus' feeding miracles were intended to speak of God's abundance into a culture of scarcity. But we live in a culture of excess. Excess messaging, excess packaging, consuming, even excess dieting. We hardly know how to hear the word abundance as a positive thing, as promise. So how would we respond if Jesus performed a loaves and fishes miracle now, right here in our midst? Would we allow ourselves to enjoy his generosity, savor his offering? Or would we hem and haw and hesitate? Mark's version and some of the others say that the crowds ate and were satisfied. Would we be able to say that? Or would we say something more like, we ate and immediately started calculating 700 calories, 900? How long on the treadmill to undo the damage? Or maybe we ate, but only the fish, not the bread. You know, carbs. Maybe when Jesus fed the multitudes, he was also acknowledging what we seem to forget. That we are physical beings with legitimate needs. We are not some airy spirits. We have bodies. And these bodies themselves are gifts from God, gifts worthy of honor and care. And maybe that means maybe even some carb control. I would argue that Jesus was able to perform this miracle, whatever the details were, he was able to do it precisely because he took basic human needs so seriously. When his disciples looked at the crowds, they saw only their insufficiency, their own scant resources, the impossibility of the situation, the liability, the improbability of success. 6 months' wages couldn't even give them a little. They saw all the problems. But Jesus allowed himself to see real need. And he allowed that need to hit him squarely in the gut. In the face of the crowd's deep hunger, despair could not be an option. Someone had to do something. Someone had to act. So maybe it's only when we get in touch with our own deep needs for nourishment, for shelter, companionship, for hope and help, for love, that we can extend a gracious heart, a caring hand, or a generous table to others. Maybe we need to be aware of our own hungers and longings and needs before we can turn abstract compassion into life-giving doing. In the end, Jesus' feeding miracles were his self-revelations. He gave bread because he is bread. He fed hungry bodies because he too is an honored a body. Every time we celebrate the Eucharist here at St. Mark, we say something like this: the disciples knew the Lord in the breaking of the bread. And we pray something like this: you have given us not only this bread and cup, but your very self, that we may feast on your great love. Filled again by your grace, may we hunger for your reign of justice, and may we thirst for your way of peace. And all that good stuff. Yes. This week and always.